The Angry Chicken Hearthstone podcast is produced by Amove.tv. Check out Amove.tv for more podcasts covering Blizzard games. For more of Jocelyn's gaming podcasts, visit JossPlays.com. And to find many more podcasts with Ridiculous Hat, follow at Ridiculous Hat on Twitter. Every episode of TAC is made possible thanks to our legendary patrons over at patreon.com/TAC.
Time's up. Let's do this.
Legendary!
You beast, Deroxys!
You smell like a leper gnome!
I knew it!
So hot!
A podcast about Hearthstone and Battlegrounds. This is The Angry Chicken!
And welcome to The Angry Chicken. I'm your host, Jocelyn, and joining me this week is Ridiculous Hat. Garrett, unfortunately, has COVID.
Aw.
Yeah, there's no good way to say that. It finally eventually caught up to him, as it probably will catch us all.
I want to be happy to be here talking to you, but I wish Garrett didn't have COVID.
Yes. Same.
I guess feel it's so a pretty normal thing to wish. Like, it's just,
yeah.
I hope that
I wish my friend wasn't
COVID.
Sick.
Yeah.
He did say he's doing okay. He did say that today was his first good day, but he's having a lot of problems with his throat and his voice. So obviously, podcasting was off the table, but we do hope he'll be back next week. But Hat, you weren't here last week. You didn't get to talk about the mini set. What are your thoughts on Throne of Tides?
Hi. So the last time I was on the show, I don't think we even had the announcement of the mini set. We have like the announcement of the announcement. I don't even
that
remember.
It might be true because, yeah, I think that you guys had a show canceled and then we did the review of the mini set. So I don't even, yeah, I think you're right. I don't think you've even talked about it at all existing, let or alone the, card thoughts.
Did I talk about the balance changes? I don't know.
No, because we did balance changes last week. So yeah, no, there's so much to talk about.
So since then, a lot of Hearthstone has happened.
Yes.
So yeah, Hearthstone's cool. I don't know. Where do we even start? I've been having fun playing. I spent a lot of time in airports this week. A lot of time in airports. If you want to know more about that.
Did you want to talk about that?
No. If you want to hear more about that, check out my Twitter. I go into all the details on this week's Coin Conceit, which is going to be posted about an hour before this show gets posted. But it's they're infuriating. I don't want to go through it again. I'm drinking a beer. So I had a lot of time to mobile game. In the interest of full disclosure, there are a lot of good mobile games out there right now. I've been Marvel snapping. No, I am not doing a Marvel Snap podcast. I'm making eye contact with the camera, and my wife can hear this. I'm not doing a Marvel Snap podcast. I'm not doing it. I'm not. Promise.
I do also want to say, I too have been playing Marvel Snap, and it's so freaking addictive. Like, it has, yeah. The games are so short. That it has that, just one more, in a way I haven't felt in a game for a very long time, so.
It's the people that don't like Control Warrior. What if every game was over on turn 6? Because that's just how it is. It's a 6-turn game, except unless Limbo comes up. Piece of crap, Limbo. You get the 7 turns. That's a Marvel Snap reference. I will not do a Marvel Snap podcast. So, been playing some
but yes,
Snap.
It is. It is very fun. I will agree. It is. Didn't think I was going to get into it because it is on mobile, but it's super fun.
It's portrait mode. You don't even have to use two hands. It's a one-handed mobile card game. It's just you can be doing anything else. It's good for the train. It's good everywhere.
But we are not doing a Marvel Snap podcast.
I also played a little Diablo Immortal. I want to point out. The late game PvP monetization is dumb and bad. Don't do that. The story campaign is classic Diablo in your pocket for approximately $3. It does not cost anything. If you are vulnerable to microtransaction impulses, probably don't install the game. If you like Diablo in your pocket and you're willing to not give them any money, pretty fun. Casually. Don't do PvP. The end game monetization is not, it's not where you want to be.
Yeah. Yeah, my husband played a little bit of it, and it's definitely not my jam. I've never been a huge Diablo person, but yeah, it has some pain points, we shall say.
Yes. It's pain points on your, pain rewards points on your credit card. There's a joke there. We'll workshop that. We'll come there.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's also Hearthstone. I've been playing that. That's also a mobile-friendly game. And I've been playing some of that while I silently raged American Airlines. I guess not silently, I just said it out loud. You can kind of do a lot of different stuff. And I've been enjoying it. I hit Legend with Fel Demon Hunter a couple days ago. I think I'm at 990 now out of my 1,000. So I'm going to try and get my 1K portrait there. And then I'm at 991 with Paladin. And those are my last two.
Damn. So yeah. I was starting to feel really accomplished because I'd almost finished my 500s, except for on Demon Hunter, which still has like 20.
Yeah, you're not gonna, that's a badge of pride.
I'm not gonna get that. Yeah. As long as I can keep that. I think I'm still under level 25 on him too, so, and it starts at level 20.
I'm not trying to take anything away from you. I'm just trying to dictate the depths of my addiction. But yeah, I think I'm under 20 total wins for my last two 1K classes, and I've got the other eight done already, so pretty stoked about that. And, you know, I've been playing some Jackpot Rogue and some, trying all sorts of other goofy stuff, because you can do kind of whatever you want. I played one of the Conquest series matches I played in THL yesterday. I played four games. The one that I lost was when my 1919 survived a brawl on turn six. That was the only one I lost. So the format is kind of goofy. You can kind of do whatever. And I've been doing whatever. How about you? What have you been up to?
I just kind of typed in Murloc into my collection and then dragged them all into a shaman list. And that's pretty much what I've been doing.
I'm excited to talk to you later about the card Clownfish, because I think we're going to talk about that card.
We definitely are. But before we do that, we are going to say a very big thank you to our patrons over at patreon.com/TAC. We are supported by our epic patrons. And if you would like to get access to our super awesome Discord server, you can support the show over at patreon.com/TAC. Do we have a fancy news bumper?
Good news, everyone.
Oh, no. I'm fancy.
You are so fancy. You are on it. I didn't even tell you I was going to do that. We are golden over here. So before we get into actually talking about the mini set, I feel like we have to talk about the launch, because Hearthstone Twitter went bananas. Like, this is the biggest like explosion of incredibly passionate opinions I think I've seen in the Hearthstone community in a really long time. There were two sides. One was Kibler, one was Zeddy, and they were not nice to each other.
It's uncivil at times.
Uncivil, yes. That's a very good word for that. Yep. So essentially, the controversy came from Kibler's original tweet. And his original tweet said, and I quote, as Twitter loads for me, "Hi, please don't abuse bugs and cheat in play Hearthstone. Thanks." And some people really did not like that take. So one of the known issues on the first couple of days of the new patch was that Bioluminescence, which is the shaman card that gives all of your minions spell damage, was not working correctly.
I've been holding up fingers, audio listeners. We're not doing video.
I'm like, I don't really know why I'm getting one and two fingers from Pat right now, but
Bioluminescence, three mana shaman spell, give all of your minions one spell damage. And Bioluminescence was casting twice, so they were getting two spell damage, which is approximately twice as much. And it's not supposed to work that way, because if it did, it would say so on the card. This was a bug for 30-ish hours, for a little over a day, but not a lot over a day. because the patch was released on a Wednesday, because in the States, the Monday was Memorial Day, and they always need a day back in the office before a patch, because it's usually a Tuesday release. And this is instead a Wednesday release, because they needed the Tuesday to prep. And then the hotfix was Thursday, and I think it was, the normal window would be 2 days after the patch release. It was normally going to be Friday, but they hustled to get this out in time.
Yeah.
But, you know, if you have four minions in play on turn four, and then in turn five, you go Bio Frostbite, that's 11. That's 11 damage for five mana. I'm not supposed to do that on turn five. It's too much.
Yeah, so a lot of people were getting blown out. And so some of the controversy, so there was another card as well. Snapdragon also was not working as intended. I guess it was putting attack. Was it doing just the attack or the attack and health buff on hero cards?
I believe it was both. And it was super weird because, like, on weapons, there are two numbers in the corner. But on heroes, the way it was working, it would give the hero permanent attack even on the opponent's turn. So if you double Snapdragon and your Brucon was a 232 or whatever, and you attacked that Brucon with a 2/2, your minion would die.
Yeah.
It was weird.
It was weird. And so Snapdragon was not working as intended and was weird, but Bioluminescence seemed to get the most controversy, the most attack from the community, because it was seeing a lot of play. Bioluminescence was in Burn Shaman way before the patch. This wasn't something that just came out of the mini set. So people were playing it on ladder, maybe potentially not knowing about the bug, but maybe they did. And it was really hard for people to tell. But the point was, Bioluminescence was being seen a lot on ladder, for better or worse, whether the person who was playing the card knew about the bug or not. And people got really mad about this. So there was a lot of people who were saying, don't blame the player, blame the devs. They should have caught these kind of bugs before they released the content. You know, this is just another example of Blizzard greed and rushing things out to meet deadlines. And I almost see hat.
I don't know how to roll my eyes, but audio.
Yeah, I think you're kind of doing it with the tone. So yeah, I think there was kind of that take that Blizzard was being greedy and rushing out content and not testing things properly. There was the take that you're a horrible, awful, terrible person if you play a deck with a bugged card in it just to win on ladder. Who does that? There was a lot of extreme takes on both sides.
Yeah, and it doesn't help that there was a known, I'm going to go ahead and say it, bad person that has been banned from Hearthstone Esports, and also, like, you know who I'm talking about, Joss.
I might not, actually. So, continue on with your thought. You don't have to name and shame them, but I might know the more you say.
There's a player that's been banned from HS Esports for a lot of reasons, including but not limited to a history of misogynistic comments. Not great, but A-Bar took them out of the pool. And they advertised that they got Rank 1 Legend with the bug card and taking full advantage of it. And there's a difference between playing a deck with bio in it because you want to play that deck, and specifically playing it for double damage, knowing that and doing the math with that in mind to kill people way out of nowhere when you shouldn't be able to. It's, are you playing the game or playing the client? That is a substantial distinction. Did you switch to this deck because of the bug and then take turns knowing the bug? Or are you just someone that likes Burn Shaman and then you play it and sometimes your Maelstrom Portal is a little bigger and that's okay? It's big distinction there. Obviously, there's room for nuance, and that wasn't how Twitter discourse went down.
No.
There were so many takes in the takeosphere that day. Like, it was exhausting. And I'm sure there's been another nonsense group of discourse takes recently. I don't remember it. You know, BG's players are all uppity about Diablo, and yeah, there's been some stuff very recently. But either way, it was tiring.
I just feel like, for me, this seemed like a big controversy because everybody I follow in the Hearthstone sphere was talking about it, which has been quite a while since that has happened. But on top of that, there were a couple of CMs that basically, like, launched the patch and then went, okay, I'm going to go spend some time outside or with my family, or, and then came back to a total, complete, utter, ridiculous dumpster fire of Twitter.
Yeah.
I felt very bad for them.
Really rough on them. And they also, Blizzard employees, so like they had a very consistent take. Not take, position. It's not a take when you work there. Very consistent position. I'm not going to say that this is specifically guided by the company, but it makes total sense. There were some QA testers, some CMs saying that, like, hey, it's the terms of service say don't exploit bugs. They say that. And these employees weren't saying we're going to ban you. They're just saying exploiting bugs against the terms of service. Not my place to say what any punishment's going to be, just that here's the thing that you agree to when you play Blizzard
games.
Here's
the rules. Yeah, exactly. Here's the rules. Like, you all signed this. You clicked okay.
Yeah. And they were saying, you know, the client is not the word of God. It's the ref. The word of God says what I say is okay. The ref says, you know, it's this is how things are working while I'm around. And if the ref isn't looking, it doesn't make the rule not a rule. It just means that they're not looking. Now, no one got banned for this. No one's going to get banned for this. It's not what they're saying. Just the what Blizzard employees want you to do is play the game and not the client. And so they say, hey, this is what we'd like you to do. There was no real consequence there, but also it wasn't clarified. I don't want to call it a threat, but would it be possible for you to be banned by playing a bio deck? The answer that we know is no, it is not possible. But that wasn't explicitly stated, clarified one way or another. And so if you were just someone that was browsing Hearthstone Twitter without prior experience of how these sort of things go down, you might say, well, I better not play that deck because I don't want to face consequences. Might have had the effect they were looking for, but also might have been through ambiguity, which I don't like super love, but I'm not surprised by.
Yeah, and I think that, like, I don't know, me as a person, me as a player, like, I see when cards are bugged and then I don't play those cards. And I'm not going to tell anybody else how to spend their recreational time. But, like, I don't know, maybe I'm just a lame rule follower, but I feel like when I see that something's broken, I'm like, okay, take time to fix it. I'll do something else.
Yeah. And it was a Wednesday. I understand. So, like, for the pro players going to Summer Champs, the cards were banned. The broken cards were banned for Summer Champs because they didn't know if they'd get the fix in time. So they just said, you can't play those cards.
Right, right.
Significant competitively because it basically removes the entire Burn Shaman deck from the pool of possible decks. It changes the meta. I don't think it would have been popular anyway, but it changes the meta. So it's significant and it matters. But for the rest of us that are just playing ladder on the first of the month, play what you want. I played for many hours trapped in airports. I saw one Burn Shaman while the card was bugged. One.
Yeah, I didn't see anyone playing it.
Yeah. I see people tweeting pictures or whatever. Like, I understand that people are playing it, but I faced one and I play at 11x MMR. So it wasn't all over High Legend.
Just that little subtle casual flex there.
Okay. First of all, you right. You damn right. I want everyone to know. No, I want people to be aware that even playing at relatively high Legend MMR, this wasn't the only deck I saw or even a frequent deck that I saw. It was rare to experience even at the highest competitive MMR. I don't judge anyone for playing cards the way they work in the client, because that's the purpose of having a digital rules engine, is that it tells you what you can do and what you can't do. I wouldn't want to be in a position where if I play bio, I win if it's +2 spell damage and lose because it's +1, so I didn't play it. But if someone wanted to play that deck, please don't feel like we're saying you shouldn't have done that and you should feel bad, because that's not what we're saying at all. Just that was Kibler's point. That's what he was looking for. Is the second you play bio for +2 spell damage and win because of it, because you knew about it, then you are in a gray area at best. And I think that's not an unreasonable position. Well, Zeddy, the other perspective, who's been known to instigate from time to time, I do also find some merit with the idea of, like, it's your job to play the cards that they work, and it's the dev's job to make them work that way. And I don't think that's necessarily unreasonable either. And it turns out there's some space between those opinions.
Who knew? I do think, yeah, I do see both sides of this for sure. I think if I was executive in charge of Hearthstone, I would have turned the cards off. I would have been like, okay, these things are broken and not working the way they're intended. They don't exist in the client till we fix it.
So they did that for Wild a month ago when Twig of the World Tree was causing disconnects. The issue is there's no tech for messaging. So the error that you get when you upgrade a card to gold and delete the original copy and have to repaste the deck of there was an error starting your game, please try again. Imagine if everyone with bioluminescence in their deck just got that error for a day with no warning, no messaging, no indicator in collection, no nothing, just the game straight up didn't work. It is a huge disaster and a nightmare for CS, and the only people that know about it are the people that are regularly on Hearthstone Twitter. That's a bigger problem. Now, they did say they're building out tech to make that a more viable solution, and that would be ideal.
Which, okay, so this is where I'm going to put my come on Blizzard hat on, because if you can put a pop-up at the beginning of my game and tell me there's something new in the effing shop, you can put a pop-up at the start of my game that says this card is no longer working. We'll let you know when there's a fix.
But how many days did it take them to make that pop-up happen in every language?
I guess localization is fair.
Yeah, this situation sucked, and if I'm the executive director of Blizzard, or of Team 5, or whatever position you want to have, if I am a person that makes more money than I do now, and has more authority than I do now, and am more in charge of Hearthstone than I am now, if all three of those things are true...
Wait, you're not in charge of Hearthstone?
I am not. I'm not even a little bit. But I think there's a real discussion to be had around what the hell has been happening with the client. Because, like, listen, development is hard, they're doing a lot of stuff, but the bugs have been worse lately over the past 6 to 12 months, and I think that's objectively true. And how do you make that stop? No, the answer is not a full client rewrite. That'll probably make things worse. Best case scenario, you get Overwatch 2, and nobody wants that. it's not hire more people, because hiring more people, for anyone that's worked in HR or management, you know this. Hiring more people is harder, not easier. It costs you time. It saves you time later, but it costs you time now, and they don't have the time. They need a solution now and a solution later. Because when you're hiring people, they don't know the game yet, so you have to have someone that knows the stuff take time out of their day job fixing the game to teach the other people how to fix the game, and that means that the game gets less fixed, and we want the game to be more fixed. You follow. You get this.
I do.
So, what is the solution? Because it's been not great, and I don't have a great answer other than maybe slow down doing stuff. That's the best answer I have right now.
Which I don't think that they're going to do. They've had their kind of set release schedule for quite a while now, to the point that we can pretty much, like, if we took a solid look at a calendar, we could probably predict their release dates for the next 5 years. Like, they've had...
There was a thread about that today on Reddit, which, by the way, with the dates that we see... They're expecting this to be a slightly accelerated schedule from what we're used to. Do you remember in 2020?
Probably not.
It's good answer. But remember when they said they're going to try and release sets in November to get away from the holidays? You remember that?
Yes.
I think they're going to try that again, because the current target for the next set and mini set, based on... both when the tavern pass goes out of the shop and based on when the mini set goes out of the shop, because those dates are on the things already in the shop and in the client.
They're visible now, yeah.
Yeah. It's targeting a set release last week of July and a mini set in September. And both of those are very new dates, because we've always had the second set first or second week of August, and the mini set has been October, except when it was super delayed till November. So it would be a very different cadence, like 3 weeks earlier on everything.
Mm-hmm. Which, yeah.
And those are faster times, which usually doesn't mean less buggy.
Yeah. That's true. They're kind of moving in the opposite direction to where you would think that they would be.
Yeah.
Or where you would want them to be, I guess, if you want them to fix more bugs. But I mean, yeah, like I also understand, because I did see some of the QA employees kind of talking about this whole issue, and Blizzard should have caught it and whatever. And I think that, like, the last kind of point I want to make about this controversy is basically, like, don't, if you want to blame Blizzard, like, the big capital B umbrella, like, the overarching corporation, for the decisions to, like we just talked about, accelerate the timeline, you know, like, be mad about the fact that they're rushing things out and they're buggy, fine, don't go after the QA guys. Like, they are bottom of the Blizzard totem pole. And if you have been paying any attention at all since all of the lawsuit stuff came out was that last year? Oh my God. I know. Like, it feels like it was like 3 years ago at this point, but it was literally not even a year ago yet. Anyways, all the stuff that's come out with the lawsuit, and like the kind of unionization talks in some of these bigger corporations, including Blizzard, because they've had Raven Studios has been trying to unionize under Blizzard, and there's been lots of conversations about if the buy from Microsoft actually goes through, they're going to honor the union, this, that, and the other thing. But like, that's a bunch of QA people kind of driving this, and they don't get paid a lot. They don't get treated well. They're like most of the time working on short-term contracts even. And so they're not the people you want to focus your ire at. Like, take it out on Blizzard, capital B, not your CMs, not your QAs, not your, you know, the people we normally talk to. They're not the ones that make these timing decisions, and they can't catch every bug. They're just, you're never, with a QA team, you are never going to replicate live servers. Like, they go from, even if they had 500 QA testers, you open up a live server and now you've got millions of players. Like, they're never going to catch everything.
And also, important note, QA doesn't fix bugs, they find bugs. Their job is to find them. The engineers fix the bugs. And that's not going to say that this is anybody's fault other than the way the release schedule and the client have clashed. That's at least my hypothesis. I don't know. I don't work there. Neither of us work there. Listener, you probably don't work there. If you do work there, thanks for keeping your head above water. But it's unclear that, like, there's this evil Mr. Burns type sitting in a giant wooden chair at the front of Team 5, like, please, sir, give us some time to fix the bugs. No, make mercenaries and Diablo Immortal. I don't think that's what's happening. They just said, hey, let's make some more stuff, and then eventually...
I do think that is what's happening. Yep.
I don't know. Maybe Diablo is like, maybe the Blizzard office has a wing in Tristram. I don't know. But it's entirely possible they said, all right, let's make some more stuff because people want to make some more stuff. And then they look back and they're like, we kind of did too much stuff. And now what do you do? but there are more QA than engineers. Engineers have limited time because they got to make the next thing and they got to fix this thing and they got to know what's going on, and QA is to find it. And often QA finds it before the patch is released, and engineers like, well, it's already being deployed, so put it in the known issues list and then we'll fix it. And then also, not every card gets tested in every circumstance. Just not possible. And the only reason that Bio was such a big deal is because it was a standard competitive card. It wasn't Tyrantus, which was bugged and wild of having no text for a while, for like a year.
Really?
And nobody cared unless people were making drama YouTube videos, because nobody was playing Tyrantus, because it's Tyrantus. It's it's 10 mana 12-12. Like, that's just not what you're doing in Wild no more.
Yeah. Do Wild games even go to 10 mana anymore?
I mean, it's 10 drops don't always come down on turn 10 in Wild.
That's true.
Sometimes
that's true.
It's turn 1.
Sometimes they cheat.
Yeah, Big Shaman's really good in Wild right now, and those 10 drops typically come down Lightning Bloom, Muck Morpher on turn 1, so... But none of them are playing Tarantus, so it's irrelevant anyway.
Yeah! But yeah, point is, bugs exist. The only reason this bug mattered is because people were already playing it in a deck before the mini set released, so it was noticeable.
Yeah, it's an unfortunate situation. I don't think it needed to be as whiny as it was, but I mean, it's social media on a Wednesday, like.
Yeah, it's social media, and it's also, it wasn't necessarily a conversation just about the specific cards or the specific bugs, right? It was more the grander moral conversation around cheating, right? And I think that's why people got pretty heated on both sides. But yeah, so that was the Hearthstone Twitter drama of the week. Let's talk about the mini set and the potential impacts that it had. And before we go too far into the actual individual decks, Hat, I wanted to point out, this is season 99. Next season, next month, is season 100. Do you think anyone other than me noticed and cares?
I forgot there were seasons. Like, it's... But yeah, it's... The deck tracker has this window where you can type in what season it is. And there's never a current button, so I have no idea. If there was a current button, I might keep up with this.
it was just, honestly, it's because I was on some site, might have been Hearthpwn or something, I can't remember, anyways, and it was like, this is season 99's card back, and, you know, starts June 1st, and I was like, wait a minute, if this is 99, that means July 1st is 100, and that feels milestone-y to me.
They'll probably do something.
I hope they have a cool, like, celebratory card back, like a diamond card back or something.
Was season one in beta or launch or what? Because I didn't play in, like, beta when there was the different ranking system back then. Like, the really different one.
The monthly seasons, I'm pretty sure, came with launch Hearthstone. I don't think that there were... Maybe they're worse. Now I don't know.
I bet at the end of open beta. Okay, so looking...
You're asking me to remember way too far back when I couldn't even remember 2020, so...
I found an article, March 28th, 2014, from CM Zariah. Been a minute there. March 2014 was the first ranked season. So I
Which
think
that was also the official launch, right?
On
March
desktop.
2014.
Mobile wasn't out yet, but on
mobile
desktop.
Mobile was later,
yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There you go. A little Yay. Piece of Hearthstone history. So is anything crazy going to happen for season 100? Yay or nay?
Not crazy. They probably do card back or something. Like, is there be something?
I hope so. I hope they do something. I hope they're like, hey, we've been around for 100 months. That's a lot of months.
I'm doing finger math, chat. There's no chat. We're not live. Why does what has happened to my brain?
I don't know.
That's 60 is 5 years.
Yeah.
So that's 10. It's over. It's 8 1/3 years. That's a bunch.
Yeah. It was really fun to watch your face while you math that out. Math is hard.
It's if I don't contort my face, I do math slower. It's strange.
Makes sense. So my comment about the mini set last week was that there didn't seem to be anything crazy, impactful, and meta-breaking in the mini set. I thought that there was some cool design choices. I think all of the cards that I called out as cool design choices are not being played right now, which is kind of unfortunate. I thought there were some cool ideas, but yeah, cool ideas don't always make playable Hearthstone cards. So did the mini set have the impact that maybe you thought that it was going to had?
So this has been a weird time because... The majority of Sunken City, the pre-mini set, had two different pretty warped periods. There was Druidstone, and then there was Demon Hunter, Quest Hunter, just those two, really. And Warrior was good because it dealt with at least one of them. Demon Hunter, Quest Hunter. And then the 2 weeks before the mini set was kind of rad. After they changed 20 cards and everything was different and you could do all sorts of stuff and it seemed like Demon Hunter was the worst class and it was kind of interesting and cool and funky, and there was a lot of exploration to be done there. So we got an extension of that meta with new cards. So people are going to say it didn't really change anything, but like we were already in the middle of a bunch of change still. So it's it drove that change a little differently. I don't think any completely new decks outside of Murloc Shaman maybe were created. You can like kind of do, you can kind of talk about Frontlines Paladin if you like making up bad decks for the purpose of a podcast.
Okay. I got rocked by a Frontlines Paladin on like the very first day because I had no idea what they were doing at all. I had no idea what I was doing at all. I built a Murloc Shaman deck literally by typing in Murloc and then just dragging and dropping all of the Murlocs into my list. And it didn't really work. It wasn't winning a lot. And then I took out, I think, two crappy Murlocs and put in two Bloodlusts instead. And then I won. I won. All Bloodlust of the winnings.
Good in the minion deck.
Yes.
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 Very
so,
good.
Had I had the Bloodlust in the deck, I don't think I would have lost to said Frontlines Paladin. They would have been dead long before they could have Frontlines did me.
Frontlines did. We'll go with that.
Yeah, we'll go with that. But yeah, they wouldn't have had time to do that had I actually built my deck correctly, but I'm not a deck builder, so don't blame me. Anyways, point is, not a great card. But when it worked, like it did against me, it definitely made me go, okay, wait, what? Because it was like, it pulled like a Tyrion and a whole bunch of like super big minions that were like giving them all this healing and armor and all kinds of craziness. And I was like, wow, maybe I misjudged this card because even though I'm a minion based deck, they're destroying me right now because all my guys are little and all their guys are big and I'm never going to make it through all those divine shields. So it was impressive when it worked, but I don't expect it to work literally ever except day one of a meta when people don't know what's going on.
Yeah, it's super wide boards that don't kill you right away in slow decks have three major problems. One, getting hit in the face early. Two, damage agnostic removal like Brawl or Gigafan, Twisting Nether, Shadowcrafter Scabs. Yeah. Three, Snowfall Guardian. All three of these are major problems. So, it's like, Paladin kind of sort of has the survival tools, but if you look at the Holy Paladin list, the regular kind, not the Frontlines kind, like half their deck is minions that don't cost very much, and the Frontlines deck needs to lean into Vandar. So you can't play Wild Pyro, can't play Bannerman, can't play Battle Vicar, can't play Knight of Anointment, can't play Myrmidon. A lot of stuff that you can't play.
Well, and that's what made it so difficult to play against on the first day was because I didn't know what they were doing. They had some tools like spell removal, control paladin type tools. But I was like, but what are you doing? Because I think I'm just going to win because you're not really doing anything. And then all of a sudden they were like, bam, this is my thing that I'm doing. And I was like, oh, shit, that was good.
I lost to one of these as a Thief Rogue because Thief Rogue doesn't play very many minions anymore. Plays a lot of like spells that make minions. So
right.
they had a couple different equality taxes. They had Carrial on Curve, and then they front lines, and I pulled two minions, which was all the minions off of my deck, and they pulled seven, and then I left.
That's a fair response.
Yeah, this is my general rule, and like we're gonna talk about control war in a bit. This is a thing that we're gonna talk about later. I'll just give Hat's abbreviated guide to sanity in Constructed Hearthstone. Especially if you were an aggressive player like me and you are facing a warrior deck. If you make it to turn 10 and you press end turn and they're not gonna die or be close to dying within the next turn, just go. Or if you find yourself opening some messaging app, probably Discord, and finding a place to complain about Control Warrior during their turn while the game is still going, just go.
Just leave.
And this is exclusively before turn 10, because if it's after turn 10, they're not going to die and you're playing an aggressive deck, why are you still in the game? So if either of those things happen, just go. This is the same thing. If you're against Frontlines Paladin, they frontlines you for 7 minion, good effort. You don't got to watch the fireworks. Just head on out.
Just go.
Just do something else. It's okay. This is also an organic evolution of playing against Baron's Priest in Baron's, because turn 10 was when my Wicked Stabs upgraded. So if the 6 damage wasn't enough, I was just like, I'm just gonna dip. And when I got salty is when they elucidated my Wicked Stabs before turn 10, which is why I would implement that clause. Very important to have a set of rules.
Well, I think it's always important to have a set of rules when playing anything that keeps you sane.
Yes. So how about you? What have you seen so far that's like stood out to you? I know you did the Murloc thing. Clownfish is an awesome card.
Yeah, so I did do the Murloc thing. The biggest thing that I noticed is that everything felt very similar to how it was before. Like you said, there was nothing other than Murloc Shaman. There was nothing crazy and new necessarily. Although I did see a lot of Mine Rogues, and I wanted to talk to you about Mine Rogue because it seems like probably the kind of rogue I might enjoy playing. It's combo-y, but like also minion-y, and it does the death rattle things, and it just seems like the not as roguey as other rogue things.
It's rogue in all the ways that I personally despise. It's rogue the way that Poison Rogue was rogue in Alterac.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, that's a good thing for you.
Yes.
You say minion-y. Do you mean the minion Wildpaw Noel? Because if so, then yes.
Yes.
And if you mean other minions, then absolutely not. It has the
turn into a version of your Death Rattle minion guy, the stealthy one that turns into the 2/2 version of the Death Rattle minion you play. But that minion.
But that's
and
just
it has
damage.
Mines.
That turns into 8 damage. That's what that minion turns into. Turns into 8 damage. The mine is 8 damage. The sword is like 16 damage. And then they're hopefully dead, or they have armor and you leave. You just go. Or they have Carrion, yes, and you just don't even wait for the animation to finish. Just hop along. Just get out of there.
Yeah. I guess a better way to say, not necessarily minion-y, but maybe themed? Maybe?
It's like, it's roguey in the... I guess this is more like Assassination Rogue. Like, is I'm big on I'm more of a subtlety rogue kind of person, but you're into Assassination Rogue, you just like big numbers of damage and no like stealthy nonsense or whatever. You don't want to play a bunch of cards a turn, you just want to kill them.
Yeah, so if you like the stealthy nonsense, you're a fan of the boat rogue.
Yeah,
with the Asharan vessel that puts the 3/3 stealth guys on the bottom of your deck. And then you dredge things, and then they pop out.
And then you hit them.
Yeah.
But Mind Rogue skips all that stuff and just like, what if we just did the damage now?
Yeah.
So like, and I'm not
what
trying to be...
What if they just die fast?
Yep. It's very much a deck tech kind of deck. He loves this stuff. Like, he loves all this. It's very off-board, which is, I think, part of the reason why people might have strong reactions to it, because it's very much about from-hand power and stealth and zero mana nulls. So, like, it's trying to do things that are, I'm not going to say objectively evil, but it's definitely trying to find the rules of the game to, like, push those boundaries pretty hard. And there's nothing wrong with that. A lot of people like breaking those rules. It's capable of having turn 5 kills. Those aren't likely, and the deck doesn't win much. It's like in the 45%-ish win rate range. If you're better with it...
Yeah, it's definitely not taken over. And it also is quite draw dependent, I think, too, right? Because there's like sometimes when you draw the... Yeah, so I think that there's... It kind of checks all the boxes that it should check in order to not be considered overpowered, right? Like, if this was easy to pilot, not draw dependent, and killed you on turn 5, this would get nerfed very quickly. But, like, it has the potential to kill you that early, and then also the other downsides of draw dependent, hard to play. So, I don't think it's out of control, and I don't think it will get out of control, but I have seen a lot of people trying to play it as I kill them with Murlocs.
Yes, I agree with you that it felt more popular. And the new Rogue One drop Shatter Shambler, that it pops the next Death Rattle you play and that card costs one less, did make the deck a lot better, because one of the issues that you had was it was tough to kill your own stuff, especially the 0/2 mons. Like, you had to backstab your own minions. This makes that a lot better. And Snowfall Graveyard, the field enchantment that doubles all your death rattles, card's goofy. Like, it, you just end up killing people out of nowhere. I've died from 20 damage on turn 5 because it's turn 3 sketchy. So it's like turn 2, the lieutenant that sits there and transforms into death rattle. Turn 3 sketchy, which draws a death rattle and pops it, which hit the mind. That's 4 damage. Counterfeit Blade, which it picks up a death rattle that you pop that game. Hit me for 4. Turn 5, graveyard mine, take 20. That was a lot. That was a lot.
Yes.
So it's not what I was expecting, but you can just kind of die out of nowhere. But if you know it's coming, if you have any kind of armor gain, or you just pressure them faster, the only board stuff they have at all is like they is just some SI7 extortions and gnolls. That's it. And they have nothing else to control the board. So, like you saw, if you're playing Murloc Chomp, you just go super wide, and then they can kill one of your things, then you hit them with the other 6, and then they die.
Yes. Which is very satisfying.
Oh, yes, I agree.
So this is, I guess, the deck that I feel like people should be more mad about is Murloc Shaman, because like I have consistently killed people between turns 4 and 6 because just simply having Bloodlust on 5 and having anywhere from 3 to 5 minions on board by that point, because I have just been loading it up with cheap Murlocs and hitting them in the face. A Bloodlust on 5 will kill them. Almost every time.
It's really, really good if no one messes with your board. I'm wondering how many people are messing with your board, because this is a control format. The two best decks in the format in order are Control Warrior and Holy Paladin. So I'm wondering how often you're getting cleared.
Not often, but when I get cleared, I lose.
Yep.
So it's basically like the control decks have drawn poorly against me, I would guess.
I would guess that too. Like, I'm not sure. That would be my theory, because...
Well, and I haven't... Yeah. I've seen so much Rogue. Like, I would say, like, as soon as I started playing after the mini set came out, 80% of my games were against Rogue. Not always the same Rogue. Sometimes people doing mine things. Sometimes people doing, like, boat things with their little...
Boats?
Stealth guys. I was like, invisible guys? That was
the same. Audio listeners,
guys.
You're all audio listeners this week. You missed some really excellent hand movement. It's like if you were doing a sideways doggy paddle in the air kind of thing.
Yeah, I don't know why you didn't get stealth from that.
it's like if you were like trying to quietly swim ashore to ambush someone, you do like a little stealthy dog.
Yeah, the little
paddle.
Side, yeah.
I mean, I've never been a Navy SEAL. I assume that's how they do it.
But yeah, I've seen a lot of Rogues, and not so much of anybody else. And I also, before the patch, played a lot of the Control Warrior decks. So I also had a pretty good idea of what they were trying to do and what they were going to do to me and stuff like that. So I was able to kind of navigate that, because the biggest thing that I found when playing Control Warrior is if I couldn't keep armor... Like, my clears don't work. They yes. want me to pay 10 mana for a clear, or, you know, like, to shield slam something, or to play the dragon that does that basically has a built-in shield slam. All of that stuff requires you to have armor. So if you just keep knocking down the armor, then they have a really hard time controlling things. So that
so
became...
if you hit the warrior, they die sometimes.
Yeah, sometimes.
I like where your head's at. I like where this is going. And so we were talking when you were like before the show last week, and you were like, what should I get into? What should I come back with? And then you respond, I think like 6 hours later. So I assume you played like 2 games. You were like, I'm a Control Warrior enjoyer.
Yes. And I did quite enjoy Control Warrior before the patch hit. I ended up actually pivoting from Control over to Quest Warrior because... it was just winning, and I like winning. And I ended up being about 50-50 with Control Warrior. I think I ended up playing about 20 games overall, and I was about 50% win rate. And then I was like, or I can just play Pirates and hit like 70% win rate, and that's better, even if
it's
boring.
More. Yeah.
Yeah, it is more. Yes, 70% is more than 50. Nailed it. But
strategy section here in the Angry Chicken.
Yeah.
Need to know... So what we're going to do next week, we're going to come with another 2 numbers. We'll tell you which one is bigger. You're going to have to tune in to find out.
Oh, God. Yeah, that's great content. But yeah, Control Warrior I found because I have never really been a Control Warrior enjoyer in the past. I don't like sitting back and being passive and just waiting for my opponent to get bored and leave. Like, I never want my opponent, and I feel like I do this in Dead by Daylight a lot too. I want my games to be enjoyable for both me and my opponent. I never want to bore them to the point that they just want to leave. So I don't know if I call that this version.
I don't know if beating them is enjoyable, but I understand your primary impulse isn't to, you don't get fun by denying them theirs. And there are some people, that's why they play the game, the ticketist enjoyers, the Elusia players of the world, and they know who they are, and they are not ashamed, and they should not be. But I like it. People listening that liked Elusia, I like the game more when you lose. I like it. And that's how they feel about me, so we're on the same page. It's okay. But yeah, the first version of Control Warrior I really liked was it was between BRM and TGT, when the bottom half of your deck was just removal, and the top half of your deck was Sylvanas, Dr. Boom, there were two Shield Maidens, there was Ragnaros, Alexstrasza, and Grom.
Mm.
And like you just played a bunch of good, like it was called Wallet Warrior because you played a bunch of good legendaries, like around 8 to 10 legendaries.
I was
going
to say most of that deck, it wasn't technically most, I guess, but it felt like at the time no other deck was playing more than two or three legendaries, and then Warrior comes along and they're like, oh, a third of my cards have a golden gem.
And all the ones that win you the game, in the end,
yeah,
all of the top-end threats were legendary, and then all the removal spells were epics. Brawl and Shield Slam were epics. So it was very expensive, but you would just kill stuff for about 5 turns, then start playing your own stuff and get out of range, and then kill them. You would get them. You would Alex into Grom Inner Rage, and you would get them. So the version that's popped up post mini set, it's the popular one going around right now. It cuts Kazaka-san. That's probably going to change if it stays a control meta, because you kind of need Kazaka-san to keep up with both Holy Paladin and to win the mirror. But as of right now, it cuts Kazaka-san and instead adds in Alexstrasza and double Tidal Revenant and double Igneous Lava Gorger. These are Tidal Revenant, Igneous Lava Gorger, the new cards. So read them out. Igneous Lava Gorger, 4-mana, 3/5 taunt. It's an elemental. Battlecry, dredge, gain armor equal to its cost. Worth noting, Shield Shatter does not discount in deck. It discounts in hand. So if you hit a Shield Shatter, gain 10. That's a lot. Tidal Revenant, 8-mana, 5/8 elemental. Battlecry, deal 5 damage, gain 8 armor. For those of you playing along at home, this is Cenarion Ward and Firelands Portal that had a little baby. And those are good cards. So you just end up with these two copies of Lava Gorger and two copies of Revenant. You've added somewhere in the neighborhood of 30 extra armor to the deck that was already pretty heavy on armor.
Yeah, because it had Heavy Plate, it had Frozen Buckler.
Shield Block,
right?
Yeah, you could School Teacher for all sorts of stuff. You could Brand School Teacher for way more stuff. So this version doesn't even play the Onyxian Drake like you were talking about earlier, the 4/5 dragon with taunt that Shield Slams for you, and instead just loads up on general value stuff.
Mm-hmm. It doesn't have Amalgams either, I don't think.
Yep, those are just Kazaka-san enablers, really.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so you kind of cut that whole dragon package and then instead do more armor things.
Yep. And Tidal Revenant, see, this is the pivoting thing. We got a question about this later. I'm excited to talk about it.
Then
we're going to talk about it now. If you are at 50 armor on turn 6, Rokara on 7, you go to 60 armor, attack either their biggest minion or their biggest face, whichever one you want to hit. There's usually only the one face, whatever face you want to hit. And then Tidal Revenant the dome the next turn, and then they have to deal with your 5/8. Because Rokara attacks, let's just assume it's just 10 damage, just an Arcanite Reaper to the face. and then Revenant the next turn, you've just dealt 15 damage in two turns. You've got an Alex in your hand that's more. The Rakara hero power is more. You can equip Outrider's Axe. That's another 9 damage. Like, there, you just,
I always forget just hit that him. Her hero power can go face. Always.
Yeah. You're just Hunter now. You're just Red Hunter.
Yeah. I'm always looking for that honorable kill on the minions to get the armor, and then I'm like, oh, wait. Or I can just punch him in the face. That seems like it might work sometimes, too.
Honorable kill on the face. No matter which mechanism you use, it's very funny. Though, if you honorable kill them with Tooth of Nefarian, they don't get to leave the game until you pick the Discover. So you could just kind of trap them there if you want to. That's messed up,
that's
listener. Don't
evil.
Do that.
Evil. Yeah, yeah. Hat is kind of gleefully evil laughing right now, so I feel like he has done this. But you should
I've
not,
seen other
listeners,
people do
you
that.
Should not do
no, no.
this. Yeah.
My glee.
Seen other people. Okay.
Yeah, my friend at Bandcamp. So it's my my personal joy is getting the biggest Demon Hunter Dread Prison Glaive I can and honorable killing them with that, because then it hits them again for the same amount of damage after I HK their face. If I hit them for 8 and put them to 0, they go to negative 8. That's better. That's a better win.
That is a more dead.
Yeah, yes.
Always want your opponents to be the most dead.
If they're less dead, they might be alive. I don't want to. I don't want
to. Don't want to take the chance. So, is there anything else that you want to talk about from this meta? Is there anything else that stands out to you? Like, what are you playing? What's your choice? Like, what are people most mad about?
Good questions overall. Demon Hunter is currently showing as the best class again.
Yeah, it's so funny. They walk such a line with Demon Hunter, I feel like. It seems like there's really no middle ground with that class. Like, the stuff that they come out with, like, it goes from being, like, absolute first, best deck in the format by far, and then they're like, oh, that feels too powerful. Okay, let's tweak it a little. And then they make what looks like in any other class would be a tiny little tweak, and all of a sudden they're at, like, a 30% win rate. Like, we don't have middle of the ground Demon Hunter. And I don't know if that's like class design or what, but for whatever reason, I guess Priest is like this a lot too, where like they're
rogue
either doing
like
something or rogue. Okay. Yeah. Which also they did say Demon Hunter was rogue-ish, right? Like there, or that was one of the classes that they were trying to like distinguish Demon Hunter from, that it's most similar to. So yeah, maybe that's just very difficult to balance. I don't know, but there doesn't seem to be a lot of middle ground.
It's a perception thing, Joss, because last year, Death Rattle Demon Hunter was never super tier one. Fel Demon Hunter in Stormwind was fine. Glide DH was, it was a funny meme. Brute was a little too fast sometimes, but the deck was only okay. Lifesteal DH got nerfed because it was unfun to play against for 9 months, but for most of its time in Standard, it was below 50% win rate until they printed Brute and the Demon Hunter quest. And Fel DH in all of Alterac was good. It was just a good deck, but not much more than that. For basically the entirety of last year, Demon Hunter was a solid tier 2 class. But
I felt like I never saw them because it gave me great joy.
Exactly.
To never see Demon Hunter on the other side of the board.
Right. What you are looking for in DH is for the class to not exist. So when the class doesn't exist, then it doesn't take up any of your, that's when it doesn't take up any of your mental energy. So the only time you think about it is when you hate it. And that means you're always like, well, I either just finished hating it or I'm starting again, and that you get those fires going. But think about this expansion 2 months ago, Druid was busted. They made Kazakhstan care about dragons and added one number to Miracle Growth. And now, when's the last time you saw a ramp druid? They gone.
Yeah, I haven't played against a druid in a really long time.
Quest Hunter got one number on Dragonbane Shot. When's the last time you seen a Quest Hunter? They gone. It's Hearthstone's a game of inches. It's all about one number here, one number there. Serpent Wig, +1/+1, deck did not exist. +1/+2, deck is everywhere. It's all little things, because Hearthstone is a game of small whole numbers, so a one mana change or one attack change is huge.
Yeah, I almost feel like maybe +2/+1 would have been better for Serpent Wig, maybe, just because Bless exists. Like, maybe more attack is, but like, controlled attack is better than more health in priest. Anyways, that's probably a whole nother conversation for another time. People don't seem to like Naga decks. I've seen a lot of people being like, Naga priest, Naga mage, no, grr.
But it's, remember, people, what you want as a game designer is a format where everyone feels like they're doing something broken when they win and they're all doing different things. And the thing that they hate is also broken. They're all hating different things. That means you got a good format.
Yeah.
And I think we're pretty close to that here. The best deck that might be close to a balance outlier is Control Warrior. And I think there's some opportunity for a small numbers nudge there. I would put From the Depths to 4 so you can't get it off school teacher. And so it's a little bit more fair and you can't coin it out on 2. Otherwise, I think that the format is pretty broad overall, and Demon Hunter went from being the best class to the worst class to now it's showing the best class, and I think that'll change again. But I got Legend with this a couple days ago. Fossil Fanatic, the new 2/2 that digs out fell spells, really, really great card. But there are plenty of ways to lose as the Demon Hunter. Plenty of ways to lose. It doesn't really feel all that overpowered. And every class we're dealing with in the format here Shaman is a great example. When Bioluminescence did 2 spell damage, deck was busted. When it did 1, it wasn't. Everything in Hearthstone is one number away from being broken. Everything. So
yeah, that's fair.
And Holy Paladin's really good. Put Light Reg in your deck. It's Corridor Creeper with Taunt. Just do it. And I do want to take a second to talk about Immolate, because there was some discourse around Immolate a little bit.
The effect when somebody immolates you, when a warlock immolates you, the effect on your cards looks really freaking cool.
Oh, it's so cool. Yeah,
the VFX or whatever. Yeah.
The VFX.
But they burn more over time.
Yeah. They kind of disintegrate in your hand. Yeah. They char. Like, it's cool. Yeah, but have you seen the conversation around this card? Let me say what the card does for anyone that doesn't know it at home. It's 4 mana. You set all of your opponent's cards in their hand on fire, and then 3 turns later, the cards go away if they're still in hand. So you can still play them for 3 turns. You can put them back in your deck and put the fire out with anything other than tradable. Tradable doesn't cleanse buffs or debuffs. This is an involved rules thing. If you tradable a card and it stays in your deck after 3 turns, it doesn't go away, but if you get it back in your hand, it'll still be hot.
Which is maybe not the way that you would think that it would work. Like, I can see how that would be confusing.
It isn't how any other return to deck functionality works, but tradable is an exception by design because we're happy about it when it works in our favor. Like when you buff something in hand, then tradable it back, the buffs don't go away. But when your cards are on fire, you get it back and you're like, I wish this wasn't on fire, which is like true of life too.
Yep. I often wish things just weren't on fire.
Yeah. How often does that come up? You don't have to answer that. We're going to talk about it. So have you seen any of the discourse around Immolate?
Not really. I mean, I've seen some people basically saying the card feels bad, and then I've seen other people saying it's terrible and unplayable, and why? Why would you put this in your deck? Which was kind of the conversation that Garrett and I had last week, because it feels like it could be powerful. It feels like a trap card. It feels like, yes, I want to make my opponent's cards no longer exist. Let's do this. But you're taking your entire turn 4 off. That's not going to work a lot of the time. So, yeah, I was kind of on the fence about whether it would turn out to be like meta breaking and feels bad or a terrible, terrible card. And it seems like the community is having that debate still, even though we now have it to play with.
Yeah, this is another Ticketus. It's very Ticket-esque. Yeah, it's... Come on, that was good.
It was okay. All right, it was all right, okay. Right.
Thank you. It's like... There's always a subsection... Not even subsection. People who play reactively. I'm not going to say even control. There's a difference between playing control decks and being a reactive controlling player, where when your desire in any game is to stop what your opponent is doing without the answer being just kill them, there's a large section of the player base that's how they approach the game. I want to stop what my opponent is doing, and I don't want the only way to do that to be through lethal damage. Brian Kibler is a great example of this. He wants to do his own thing, but he wants to be able to stop what his opponent is doing, and he doesn't want it to just have to be a race to lethality. Reasonable enough perspective, not how I view the game. I like the race lethality. I like it when they die. But that sounded dark.
Yeah, that was really bad.
Yeah.
That's like show title bad.
Yeah, why are you advertising it? Okay. Anyways, I'm just going to move on. The answer to immolate is put the cards back in your deck or play the cards. And it's ironically, it's really bad against slow decks like Boar Priest because they just cycle through their cards. They want to get through the deck, and Amulet goes back in the deck. It tradables back, so they don't actually hold any of the combo pieces. It's only good against really, really slow combo decks with a bunch of expensive pieces, like Charge Warrior or Celestial Alignment. And even then, you can just thinly, and Immolate does nothing. Does absolutely nothing. So there is an answer there, but it's still kind of narrow, and you have to account for it, and you probably shouldn't because Immolate is bad against literal everyone else.
I was going to say, anytime I've had it played against me, well, I guess I did see a Curse Warlock that was running it because yeah. I think they were trying to get me to make a choice between spending the mana to get the curses out of my hand or spending the mana to play my cards that were going to burn up otherwise. So I can kind of see the logic to that. But it was also so early that my curses were only like one or two damage. So I was like, I'll just take a damage and play my minions. But again, I was playing a lot of Murloc Shaman, so I could empty my hand really easily.
And so you wanted
it did
to.
Nothing. And yeah, yeah, and if they're taking turn four basically off to set my hand on fire and then I'm playing all my minions too, they probably didn't remove what was there before and probably don't have anything on the board I'm worried about at all. So then I just have more Murlocs and they have more death.
It's more show title, more death, more Murlocs, more death. I'm just going to write
Murlocs,
that down.
More Murlocs, more death, yeah.
Yep. But it's, so in Curse Warlock, it actually makes sense because the biggest hard counter to Curse Warlock is playing zero cards, because if your hand is full, they can't damage you.
They can't curse you.
So
yeah.
They immolate to make space in your hand, not to stop what you're doing, but it's a proactive immolate. It's a little opportunistic arson to make sure that their curses have a home. And it's very important that the curses have a home for them, so they actually need that. But it's most decks aren't gonna, like, if you're not playing Curse Warlock, if you don't need them to have space in hand, if you're trying to stop someone by playing Immolate, you're probably just wasting your turn. There are very, very rare scenarios where it's truly the right thing to do, and those metas, if they ever exist, I expect will get changed artificially through balance changes, because if Immolate is ever a meta-defining card, something has gone really wrong.
So, overall, the community, like, what side do you see more often? Like, people mad that they've gotten immolated or people saying it's terrible?
It's, no one is mad about the gameplay experience of Immolate because the card sucks right now. And most metas will be designed with the intention of the card sucking. But the people that play decks that lost to Ticketus and complained about Ticketus will lose to this card and will complain about this card. And it's not because of the meta dynamics, is because of how they want to play the game, which is kind of at odds with how the game wants to be played in a lot of ways. Hearthstone's a proactive, up-tempo game where anytime you're going for really hard control, they're still making cards like Kazaka-san where you can have a long game, but eventually you got to do something. They don't just want you to do nothing all game, and because if you do nothing all game, you should probably lose. So Immolate is really good when you have, like, a medium power spike at the end of the game and you're just trying to get to fatigue every game. Blizzard doesn't really want that to be the way to play, and you can still answer what your opponent is doing, but then you gotta do something. So,
yeah,
I don't envision there being really sides to this. There will be people that are upset when they face it based on the style of deck they like to play, but typically those decks are invalidated through a lot of different means because it's just not how the game works in a competitive axis.
Yeah, I think, and honestly, just from a feel perspective, I would rather get immolated, even if I was playing a deck that had a lot of those like really expensive have to have them or you can't win the game combo pieces. I would still rather get immolated and feel like I have somewhat of a choice of how to navigate the situation as opposed to Mutinous. Like I, from a feels perspective, I feel like Mutinous feels worse. Like you have no agency. There's nothing you can do other than trying to keep a whole bunch of crap in your hand because you're hoping that Mutinous hits that instead of your big expensive combo piece. And then they also have a big minion on the other side after they've done something terrible to you. Like Immolate gives me turns to make choices and they don't get a body out of it either. So I don't know. I feel like it doesn't feel as bad. I don't know. I'd rather you lose to an Immolate than lose to a Mutinous.
If I'm playing Charge Warrior and you Immolate me on 4, I can just play Galvengar on 6. I'm not happy about it. I don't like it. But I can do something. Whereas Mutinous is just like, well, what now? Because my hand is missing a card and there's a big fish over there. And that's that is the new game state that is different from the old one. Yeah. It's kind of both. It's like Mutinous, Ticketus, Illusia, or whatever. It's just like this happens right now. Immolate's like, you better hurry up, buddy, because we're playing this game at my speed, not at your speed. Problem is that usually most people are happy to play at that speed and you usually lose because you spent a turn to tell them something they already wanted to do.
That's totally fair. So are there anything else you want to talk about before we talk about quickly the summer championship and get into some emails?
Let's do that stuff.
Okay. So the summer championship was this past weekend. And so the new way that HS Esports works is that the top 4 from the summer championship have now qualified for the World Championship. So that is Dedra, Possessi, Levik, and Habu Gabu, who was our winner of the Summer Championship. There was lots of Control Warrior. There was actually both kinds of priests, so Naga Priests and Boar Priests. I didn't actually see Boar Priest games. I only watched a little bit on Saturday, but I did see Naga Priest games. And this is another deck that I've been playing a little bit on ladder. It's kind of tricky, but also feels like I'm doing, like you said, a really broken, stupid thing I shouldn't be able to do. Like, every time that serpent wig turns yellow, I'm like, this just feels broken. I get another one?
If you have Radiant Elemental down, you're like, this can't be legal. This can't be okay.
Yeah, right? Exactly. Which, you know, we're not going to have the whole zero cost card discussion today because, you know, we do have emails we want to get to, but that does feel broken and stupid and like a thing that shouldn't happen. But I did see some Naga Priests. Those games were successful. I don't think I saw people like losing a series because of Naga Priest, whereas I hear that Boar Priest didn't do quite as well.
The winner, Habu Gabu, and was one of the few people playing Naga Priest. Boar Priest is harder to play and a narrower chance of success, and just like it's better against Warrior, but probably a worse overall deck. And there were multiple punts on stream in a row from different players where you could just see the fatigue catching up with them, and it's just really, really challenging to do right.
Yeah.
So Wig Priest just like was not commonly seen. It was only brought 3 times. But Habu won and had it in his lineup. And that also may have been helped because there were no Snowfall Guardians because Bio was banned and Wig Priest does not want to see Snowfall Guardian.
Hmm. That's fair. Yeah, you know, and we touched on it a little bit earlier when we were talking about Bioluminescence and how that would change the competitive face of the game because we did have this championship literally the weekend after the patch went live. And again, that's a whole conversation we've had before and could have again now is, you know, like launching sets right before championships. But it is interesting that it had that big of an impact on like what people brought, what the championship meta looked like versus like there's always differences between what we see played in these championships and in Grandmasters versus what we see on ladder just because of the nature of the ban system. But it is interesting how much just basically like banning the best deck in a class can have on what the entire meta of a tournament looks like. So I did think that was pretty interesting. And I think, like, I'm super glad, because I remember when Boar was announced and we were like, you know, maybe one or two classes will be able to make this work. And when they do, it's going to be crazy, amazing, ridiculous, whatever. And I've had it played against me and had them get the sword a couple of times on ladder. And like, there's no coming back from that. When they get the sword, they've won the game. But it's so hard to do. Like, I feel like they should win the game if they've been able to do the thing in that case, like in that specific deck's case.
And there is one way to beat it after they sword. The most lopsided matchup I have ever seen in Hearthstone history is in current standard, Alignment Druid versus Boar Priest. Because if you set Alignment Druid to one mana, they don't care. All their stuff costs zero. They don't care. So that matchup is 95-5.
And they have ways to gain more mana too, right?
Yeah. It's a 95-5 matchup. Because Boar Priest, in order to win, they require playing multiple cards in a turn, which they can't do. And if they get the sword, and you're at one mana, you're like, I do this anyway. This is what I want. It's like immolating a Murloc shaman.
Welcome to my world.
Yeah. So
I didn't realize it was 95-5. That's insane.
It is almost impossible to lose as the druid. Like, it's one out of every 20 games goes to the priest, which is a crazy stat. Crazy stat.
There were also some Naga mages that we saw being played that had some crazy, ridiculous turns. But also, like, a Ping Mage. Which, I mean, I actually really kind of love that deck.
It's great. It's the better version for everyone except the two people in the finals here. If you were if you are listening, and if you are either Habu Gabu or Dead Draw, really glad you like the show. If you are a person that's not them, get the Wildfire list. Do not try and win with one Ignite. What is you doing? Just get the Wildfires in your deck. It's fun. It's good. Sometimes you get games where your opening hand in the coin is Wildfire, Wildfire, Sivira, and then you have 5 damage pings on turn 5, and it's fun and great and fantastic. Just, it's a better deck. It's a more enjoyable deck. I'm so glad they finally found a way to make the Wildfire package viable. And, It's just kind of solid, but you also get to have really crazy turns sometimes and these big pop-offs, but it's not the kind of pop-off where you win every time afterwards, because sometimes you just get shield shattered or brawled and it's like, okay, I guess I better do it again.
Yeah. But yeah, I thought it was a fun tournament overall, and I am looking forward to seeing kind of what we get out of everything once the Grandmaster system is fully gone, what esports is going to look like next year, but I thought that the championship, with 4 people moving on at the end of it, do you feel like it was any less exciting? Like, when you have, like, one winner, that feels like a big, oh my god, they did it! But when you have, like, almost 4 winners, and especially where, like, I think the first place was, like, $7,500 or something, like, it wasn't a huge prize pool either, was it?
This is, so they used to do, this is HCT-esque, right? Like, this is very Abar bringing back, take the GMs and the current Masters Tour circuit and fuse them into something reminiscent of the old, like, regional championships that would play in the seasonal championships. Like, it'd be broken up by server, and the top 4 would move on, but you would still play out the top 4, and then you go to the regionals and so on, right. And then, like, there were Worlds invites, but also a big prize for that one. So it's, I really like seeing different faces as opposed to the same GM. Like, it's, you know, I'm all about storylines, but there were a lot of these players had storylines already. Like, if you've been following pro social media for a while, Habu Gabu and Dead Draw have been two of the bigger names for a couple of years now. Dead Draw in particular was famous into GM after top fouring 2 Masters Tours in a row. And then getting 4th place because he happened to have the audacity to live in Europe, where all the other good players live. He would have been the number 1 GM invite in every other region.
In any other region, yep.
Yep. So it was kind of cool seeing him make it that far on the big stage and getting the chance. it's a little weird because you could see Possessi got his World's Invite in top four and then hard punted with Boar Priest, and you could tell he just kind of like checked out of the rest of the match. And I don't blame him, but if he had been playing for first and not for fourth, then you wouldn't have seen that. This is a weird one-year artifact year, so we're not going to see a structure like this again.
Yeah, that's fair. But yeah, if you guys do want to hang out and talk about esports, we do have an esports channel over in our Discord, which you can find by heading on over to patreon.com/tack. Do you have your finger on a button right now?
Let's see here.
That was not the right one.
Hello?
Hello, it's me.
Hello.
Just quickly, do you get my message?
Yep.
Oh.
Hello, brother.
If you would like to send in an email, you can do so by emailing tackpodcast@gmail.com. You can also hit us up in our Discord like Hachikumo did, who says, I've been thinking about the concept of pivoting. I find it super fascinating as it is a concept that exists in both Standard and Battlegrounds. The moment when I switch from removing every minion to going for face, the moment I change from setting up pairs for triples to tier and focus on a build, a successful pivot brings a lot of joy, a feeling that you skillfully planned every move. So my question is, does the amount of possible pivots determine if a meta is healthy or enjoyable? I think of solitaire quest decks and I think of forcing Nagas. Those are metas where you don't pivot but execute a plan to win. Do people complain due to lack of moments where you switch gears and outskill opponents? Is this the secret of quote unquote fun versus unfun? Or is it more about win rates and uneven representations of classes or heroes? Lots of stuff in here, Hachikumo.
Yes.
But I feel like Hat has thoughts. He's leaning forward in his chair right now.
For those of you elder gamers like us out there, if you did not think of friends when listening to this question, you are not human. Because you hear Ross moving that couch up the stairs. Pivot! Pivot! You can hear it in your head now. You can hear it right now.
I can. At first, I didn't know where you were going. I thought, because the first thing my brain jumped to when I saw just the way that this question was posed, I was like, this is a Sex and the City intro. Where Carrie's just sitting there and like typing away and asking herself 800 questions that sets up the episode.
That is, I haven't watched a ton of Sex and the City. But
you know what I'm talking about, right?
I do, yes. Yeah. Yeah. But yes, Ross and the couch, and it's burned my brain. I mean, this question is like, what is the formula for fun? Hachi, that's a big question. Big question, buddy.
Mm-hmm.
The power spike turns, the swing turns you're talking about. First of all, I have a bone to pick with you, Hachikumo. I know you've been around forever. Really appreciate you. Solitaire Quest X, come on. I played a lot of quest decks. Quest Shaman, getting to unlock the crystals and actually like do stuff when you thought they were behind and then they're doing the Feral Spirit multicaster thing, that was a swing. When you were doing any of the Quest Demon Hunter decks and you were losing to aggro, then you would play three brutes. That's your pivot. They're powerful. They can often be game ending, but there are a lot of them. When you play Quest Rogue and the new one, the not broken one, and you had a 1 in 5 roll to hit the sap gizmo, and you got there and you're able to take their one minion off the board, and you're like, all right, I can barely breathe, and they have the face damage, but then you get them with the 19 damage from stealth. And what it's like, these are like special, memorable moments. I feel like it over the past few years, Hearthstone has really embraced the idea of the swing turn as something they want everyone to have access to. Because it's cool to do something powerful that decides, no, the game is on my terms now. What that looks like is going to be different for everyone.
Well, and I think it also really matters what side of that you're on, right?
Yes, like, very much so.
Like any sort of swing turn, and I think this is where they need to maybe potentially like rein in the power of those swing turns, because as great as you're going to feel if you execute some game changing pivot and it's so powerful and crazy, there's someone on the receiving end of that thought they were going to win, that all of a sudden is on the back foot when they thought they had the game on lock, and they now feel like their opponent has done something stupid, powerful, OP, and broken, and they hate it, and they're mad, right? So the amount of happy on one side is going to be the amount of sad on the other side, and you, as much as you want people to be super happy, you have to be careful about that bad experience you're creating.
Yeah, it's, and there have absolutely been times where this has been too much. The peak of Garrote Rogue, Noctobot Cost 2. I posted in the, I sent a message to one of my friends who works in teams, like, hey, it's turn 3. I started the turn with 5 minions. I ended the turn with 0. Make Rogue worse. That's, like, I got prize plundered off the face of the planet, and I was like, that should cost more mana. And you can see people that, like, there are things that look crazy that might not be. Naga Mage right now. Remember during theory crafting, we're like, what the hell is happening? But then we get to ladders, like, this is good, but it's not like they need to nerf this yesterday.
Yeah.
So you want it to feel broken but not be broken. It's a very fine line, and you're right, you need to watch it. And also, it's important to note, the pivot for combo players is the turn they go from losing to killing you. Is the turn that like, the combo pop-off and the pivot are the same. So they view it as a pivot, you view it as, what the hell just happened to me? Why am I dead now?
Well, and I think that the way that Hachikumo is posing the question and thinking of a pivot is more so, like, if the pivot happens the same turn that you're killing them, you didn't pivot, you did the thing your deck wanted to do. So, like, a pivot might be, like, if you're facing off against another aggro deck, and normally in any given matchup, you'd want to be, like, flooding the board and hitting your opponent in the face, but you recognize that in that matchup, you have to do some trading, or, you know, like, you're doing something you wouldn't normally do with your deck. So it's almost like you're executing plan B because plan A is not going to work. And recognizing when you need to do that is what makes you feel very satisfied by the fact that you have identified this is the right time to do something else.
Yeah, it's feeling more clever than your opponent and feeling like I won, yes, because I did something better. Like, that's always great. It's hard to say what exactly is being pulled for here, because people tend to look at this through the perspective of what they personally like to do. Because looking, you know, if we go line by line here, the moment I change from setting up pairs for triples to tier and focus a build, that's every BG's game. You got to do that, yeah, in every game, unless you're staying on one, right? The moment I switch from removing every minion to going for face, that's most controls decks. Not all of them, but most of them. I don't want to exclude combo players from the conversation, because even though there's no more game to play after they do the clever thing, it's still the same moment. It's just a question of how much longer does the other person stick around. But also, it's a question of what part of my fun, clever thing takes the fun away from other people, and how much balance is there, and what stops me from doing my thing too. So, I'm not a game designer. I don't know what the solution is here, but I do think the idea of guiding people towards powerful turns and then letting them happen for both players is a cool thing to do. And that's where a combo can be a little sketchy, in that if one person does it and the other person just sits there and is dead, they don't get to do their cool thing. So
yeah,
unless their cool thing
happened way, way earlier. But yeah,
right.
If we're both racing to the game ending cool thing, then how do you make that feel good for both players?
Right. And if I do my Naga Mage pop off and then you Zyrella me and then you do your boar pop off with the shield 4 turns later, technically both players got to do the cool thing. But what probably happened for the Naga Mage is I did something really cool. It didn't even matter. All my shit died and now I'm dead with no mana. Like,
yeah,
you know, and that's even doing the cool strategic change. Even if you get your wildfires going, then you have no mana and no life, and it feels bad. So it's a lot of this is based on the perception of player agency. That's really what's being pulled for by this question and what comes up a lot. People hate when they feel like nothing they do matters, and they love when they feel like what they do makes a difference. So the ideal meta is one where everyone feels like they have choices that make a difference, and they can guide their own destiny, whether that's true or not. It's just to make sure they feel that way.
Mm-hmm. That's fair. Who's our next question from?
Floaty Potatoes asks, am I just salty about BubbleBot or is it actually OP? So, okay. Agency. This relates to what Hachi says. This is agency.
Yeah, it's related. Yeah, for sure.
So the question is, why do you feel, and you know, you're not here, Floaty Potato, so I'm asking you rhetorical questions. You can answer in the Discord or in your own head or whatever. It's, what about BubbleBot do you not like? Because the way to deal with MechPaladin, you think about it, first of all, they have no board. BubbleBot sucks. So if you kill all their stuff, it's a 4 mana 4/4 that Battlecry do nothing. It's a bad card. It's not a good card, right? So when you look at the stats for Paladin, for MechPaladin, BubbleBot is one of the higher drawn win rate cards, which means you're more likely to win as the game goes on when you draw it, and it's one of the lowest, if not the lowest, mulligan win rate card. You don't want it early. You want it after you've already gotten going, which usually means your other cards are doing the important job of getting you there, and BubbleBot seals up the win. And you want cards like that. But if you kill other stuff, it does nothing. If you have damage agnostic removal like Brawl or Gigafan, like we talked about earlier, it does nothing.
Yep.
Smothering Starfish, Shard of the Naru, all these silence effects, and Snowfall Guardian. It's all that just stops whatever the mechs are doing. So BubbleBot is good if you're not killing their stuff, and all your removal is damage-based, but you're not doing it proactively first as they play stuff, and you don't have a way to kill them, and you don't have a way to remove the minions. And I understand this sounds like a lot of comedy. BubbleBot's good. We've all played against BubbleBots. Like, it's when they hit three minions, you're like, wow, that card's strong. But it also is just a nature of both matchups and how can you, going back to Hachi's question, your point, Joss, how can you as a player find your plan B? B stands for bubble. What's your plan, bubble? To pop these. What's your plan for popping? What's your popping plan for BubbleBots?
I don't know why that sounds so ridiculous.
It's because it is ridiculous.
Okay.
It sounds like a commercial for a 90s toy with batteries that run out every 40 minutes.
It's so true. But yeah, I think I agree with everything that you just said, that, you know, if you are playing the way you need to play against a minion-based deck like MechPaladin, then you should be attempting to clear their stuff. And I would argue against any paladin ever. Like, don't ever give the paladin minions.
Holy paladin, probably hit the holy paladin in the face if they let you, because if they are, like, they want to kill your minions, not really make their own, so probably go face there. But hand buff and mech, definitely get them off the board, because
yeah,
they're going to do stuff
to
you.
Get them off the board, exactly. And so, like, I think if you're playing your deck in a way that you're going to beat the mech paladin, their bubble bots are probably going to be really bad because they're not going to have any mechs on the board. If you're leaving mechs on the board, then they're probably already really ahead, and therefore you were probably going to die anyways. And BubbleBot makes that happen a lot faster and a lot easier for the paladin because their minions are going to stick around that much longer because of the bubbles. But at the same time, you were already behind. Like, this, I feel like for me, at least, my perception of BubbleBot is it's one of those, like, win more cards. It's a nice to have. But like Hat said earlier, the rest of the deck is doing the heavy lifting to get them in that position anyways, right? Like, all of the buffs that they're doing on their mechs, the Divine Shield, the Jeweler's Kit or whatever, that weapon that Shield pops, it buffs their hand, you know, like
the hand buff. Yeah.
Yeah. And then they have the mechs that are growing, and there's just the rest of their deck plays so well with itself that, like, BubbleBot is just the last thing they play before they win, at least usually in my experience. Like, if they play BubbleBot and it hits a bunch of minions, that game was already lost.
Well, so there are absolutely some games where BubbleBot does make a different, like, if you're playing against Shield Shatters, Divine Shield versus not Divine Shield, important, relevant.
Big difference.
Right? If you're playing against Demon Hunter, a bunch of Divine Shields and Taunts, really, really good. Playing against Priest, whatever, they don't care. Maybe it stops Irela, but they just play 1 mana, silence all your stuff, and it's gone. There are games where it makes a difference, but it is mostly in your control as a player how good their BubbleBot is by how much stuff you let them have and how much it matters. So if you continually find yourself in situations where you keep getting blown out by the Divine Shield and Taunts, imagine how that game would have gone without the Bubble Bot, and think about, well, if they buffed five minions, what was I going to do about the five minions? What was my plan? And why wasn't I able to do it a turn faster if it would have killed all their stuff? Or is there a way to play a different deck or slightly tweak this one just to be a little bit more prepared and more proactive in getting them off the board so I don't get blown out here?
Yeah, and I think it's Rancor, right? In the warrior list that like will do the damage and give you armor if you kill stuff. Yeah. So I feel like Rancor is a really good like example here of something that maybe is it's like tech cards, right? Like if you're going up against mech paladins all the time and they're blowing you out with bubble bots on turn four, maybe you need to find the Rancor, whether that's what it actually is, if we're playing warrior or not, like find the tech card that if you had it, bubble bot wouldn't have been a problem. Like fix the problem that you're having if you're coming up against it a lot. And if you're not coming up against it very often and you don't feel like you need to tech your deck, then I'm sorry, Floaty Potatoes, but I think you're a little salty.
Yep. And also you can zoom out a little bit more. You know what's really good against mechs, whether they have Divine Shields or not? Second copy of Brawl. Throw that in there. Just kill their stuff. It's Bubble Bot does not stop a Brawl. It's all those bubbles, they punch each other and they pop the balls. I don't know what happens in the Brawl. They all go in there and
no
only
one
thing
what
comes
happens.
Out.
Yeah.
That's what happens in the Brawl stays in the
stays
Brawl.
Stays in the Brawl. Exactly. Well, I think that's going to be it for us this week. A reminder that TAC is supported by our amazing patrons over at patreon.com/TAC. You can go to that link and get access to our TAC Discord if you would like to send us your questions or if you'd like to watch some esports events and ping Hat and I for our opinions. You can do all that over on our TAC Discord. We would also like to thank our Patreon producer, Dustin C. The back catalog of all of our TAC episodes can be found over on theangrychicken.com. And you should also go and follow the show over on Twitter at TAC Podcast. Hat, where can folks find you and your stuff when you're not here being a very angry chicken?
I think I was like a pretty nuanced chicken today. I don't know.
Yeah, you weren't very angry today.
Yes. You can find my stuff. The hub of my stuff is twitter.com/ridiculoushat, where I talk about all the other things I'm doing and horrible travel stories. But also I do two other Hearthstone podcasts, Coin Concede, we make the competitive side of the game more accessible to you over at coinconcede.com. And then the Vicious Syndicate podcast, we take a high-level data-driven look at the standard metagame over at vicioussyndicate.com. Joss, where can people find you?
You can follow me over on Twitter and Twitch. I'm at Joss Plays. That's J-O-C-E Plays. You can also go check out my general gaming podcast called The Gamers Inn. And if you'd like to follow Garrett, you can do so over at Garrett Art on Twitter or check out Amove TV for all of his podcasty stuff. That's going to do it for us this week. Thank you guys so much for listening. Job's done.
Job's done.
Job's done.
This podcast is part of the Frog Pants Studios Network. For more information about this and other shows, visit frogpants.com. Audio program so good, it's like you're there.